The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
I'm live. Okay. Perfectly. So, first of all, my name is Angel. Thank you very much for coming, for anyone seeing this. Well, I'm going to talk about federated social media in the age of social distancing. I'm sorry if the joke is terrible, but that was the title I can think about. So, first of all, I will just explain who the hell I am, okay? First of all, I am a software engineer from Spain, and I've been a free software advocate for quite some time right now. I think I've been in the as a member of Free Software Foundation since 2018, I think. When I had to make my final degree thesis, I think that would be the proper name in English, for my bachelor's degree, I decided to make it about free software and also about federated social media. And why is that? Because while I was taking my last course in my degree, a professor of mine explained to me what was federated social media, that there were free and open source alternatives to centralized social media, to Twitter, Facebook, and everything. And I remember his phrase when he said, "But people are not using them, and I don't know why." And that really stuck to me because I was like, yeah, why? And I wanted to answer that question. I know that may seem like, I don't know, straight, but you know, I began to think and I say, okay, I will try to answer that. And basically, I contacted the Free Software Foundation to see if someone had done some kind of research or whatever on the matter. They told me, no, nobody has done that. So I did. And what I'm going to present here are the results of that research. I will try to make them more comprehensible. I don't think they are very complicated. I'm not going to enter too much in the technical stuff because I wanted to center this research around the more humane side of technology. If you want to find me online, you have here my email, my personal webpage, and my Mastodon account. I will probably upload the text itself, the research itself, to my webpage. I haven't done it yet, even though I delivered a paper like a year ago. But, you know, sometimes I leave things for the last minute, but whatever. So let's move on. First of all, I want to give you here three important lessons regarding social media in general and related to social media in particular. So first of all, we have to talk about the concept. What is social media? Because many people will think that is a very straightforward question, but it is not. Why? Because social media is one of those terms like, I don't know, liberty or culture, something that you can perfectly think of examples. I mean, social media, Twitter, Facebook. But once you try to make a definition, a precise definition, you find problems. Why? Because is YouTube social media? Is email social media? By the way, they are. But you know, it's very difficult to understand the concept properly, because in fact there were social media before social media, the term was even a thing at all. What do I mean by this? Before the 2000s, we have IRC, we had Usenet, we have BBS, we have all these platforms, all these technologies that were social media. I mean, Usenet was basically Reddit. IRC was like Telegram, WhatsApp, all these applications and so on. However, if you talk to anyone who used and still uses these technologies, they will tell you that they're a little bit different. Why? Because they were based, as I see here, on public protocols, they were based on public standards. They were not owned by anybody. The technology was free, as in freedom, and it was not something centralized around a single platform. No, everyone could host an IRC channel, a BBS, whatever. And people use them. However, it's the early 2000s, and we find a phenomenon here, which is the commodification of these technologies. We see here the appearance of Facebook, of Twitter, of MySpace, platforms which offer more or less the same, but the entry barrier to use them was much, much smaller. And they actively pursue much bigger user base, and they try to make a profit out of it. This little bit will be very important later on. So, however, these technologies were private, were completely closed to anybody, and they created what many people called an ecosystem of walled gardens. Yes, the gardens themselves, I mean, Twitter, Facebook were nice, more or less. This is quite arguable, but you could not host your own Facebook, Instagram, you couldn't communicate between platforms, and this created problems. Many people talked about them, and we will do too. But for the purpose of this part, we're going to just say that through 2007 onwards, we find that people try to make an alternative to this. They say, okay, these new technologies are nice, but we want to get back to the good old days. We want to have, again, open platforms, free technologies, and to be able to take back control of those ecosystems that have become now those walled gardens. And that is when these federated alternatives appear. They offer similar affordances, and this is important. They have become even standardized. And I have to make a very important statement here, which is the following. Out of it. In here, we no longer have a technological challenge. The technology is done. And it's been even standardized. So if we don't have a technological challenge, if the technology is not a problem, then what is the problem? Okay, so when I reached this point in my research, I said, okay, so let's see what the specialist literature in the scientific world has to say about this. And I found the following. The term continuous intention. This is a term that comes from marketing literature that basically says the intention of users, because you know when you have a supermarket, you don't call them users, but you get the idea. The intention they have to continue using your product. Mm-hmm. In the case of a supermarket, the intention they have to still go to the supermarket the next time they have to make groceries. So the first paper that I found that applied this term to computer systems was this one over here. And it established the two main lines that determine whether users have the intention to continue to use a system, a computer system, because this is like from 1994, I think I am speaking from memory. But social media, as we know it today, didn't exist. Yeah, we have IRC on these things, but it was not something so massified. So, especially what's the perceived usefulness and the perceived value that those systems could give a person. And we enter here a very important point, which is that the origin of this term is the marketing literature. So these people, the people that research about this, frame it as trying to make social media a product to be sold. And this is very important. Why? Because when you think of social media as this, you need constant growth. You need to attract more people, or most importantly, to retain them. This is what FOMO is all about. FOMO is the acronym of fear of missing out. And it's basically something really basic in the human nature. What I mean by this, for example, if you are left out of a conversation with a group of people, you feel bad. You feel bad because you feel displaced. So all these platforms take advantage of this and actively encourage it. And something that struck me completely was the fact that all these papers, all of them, at the end, had a section with what's basically recommendation. But hi, Tom, which was basically recommendations for the administrators, the creators, the programmers of centralized social media on how they could retain users, of how they could basically trap them in the platforms, in their systems. So the next lesson we have to learn here is that this thing, the continuous intention, the retention of users, is something that is studied, is something that is actively pursued by the platforms that we use nowadays, like, as I have said, Reddit, Facebook, and whatever. But the question now becomes, why? They want to retain users. Okay, but what exactly is that? And here I have to make a warning, because we are entering the realm where fact and ideology kind of mix. I'm going to speak about certain terms and make certain statements that might make someone feel uncomfortable because they don't necessarily match with their ideas. But this is merely what has been said in the specialized circles that discuss the things. I'm merely transmitting it to you. If you have other opinions, feel free to express them. So here we have to talk about the work of mainly two women, Judy Dean and Shoshana Zuboff. These two women coined two terms that we have to discuss here: communicative capitalism and surveillance capitalism. We'll start with the second part, with surveillance capitalism. Why? Because basically, the way that social media makes money, I mean centralized social media, is by means of generated data. They generate data from their users and they sell them to what is arguably their real customers, which is businesses that need those data to target new users, to make better ads, and so on. You perfectly know the idea. However, these have very deep consequences, because the same way as, I don't know, an oil company needs to extract more oil to grow and become a bigger business, the same happens with social media. They need to constantly increase that surveillance among their users in order to increase the constant stream of data needed to create revenue. And the same happens, this has deep consequences, because this is like merely the economic argument regarding this. However, Judy, for example, takes it a step further. Why? Because she tries to explain how this affects the people itself. Why? Because if you do this, the message itself becomes meaningless. I mean, I don't care what you are doing in social media, what you're posting, but I just want you to generate more data, to publish more, to have more friends. I have the wheel turn completely. If you, for example, I don't know, become radicalized and began to try to make terrorist attacks, I don't care. I just want that data generated and the wheel continuing to function. And this is very, very, very important, because once you get this picture, you really understand why we're like trapped in this situation, because having an increasing user base, retaining them and making them stay in social media, even against their own health. We have the example, I think, with Instagram from some months ago, where an internal study of Facebook showed that Instagram had bad effects on people's mental health, but they didn't care. Well, probably they cared, but I was like, this is our model. This is how we survive. This is our business. We're not going to change that. So once we learn this lesson, the economic consequences and social consequences of their economic model, we can begin to question certain things. For example, okay, is people aware of this? Do they want to escape this? And this is I started to make actual research, because what I have told you is everything I read. So now we're going to get to the point where I began to do stuff. So first of all, we have to talk about this term, digital pornography. Why? Because yes, I have, as I have told you, there are already researchers who have studied the effect and of social media and people on how social media can retain them. But it was always like from the point of view of the social media platform, never from the point of view of the user. Nobody had, at least as far as I know, or nobody tried to understand why don't you quit? If you're fed up with Facebook, if you know they are spying you constantly, if you don't want to continue to have discussions on Twitter, why don't you go somewhere else? So what I did was to use digital ethnography to try to answer this. Digital ethnography is basically the same as researchers did, you know, going to all tribes lost in the Amazon, trying to understand their culture, why they did the things they did, or even with our own civilization. Doing the same, but with social media. In fact, I mainly use the references of this book, Ethnography in Virtual Worlds, and this perfectly shows what I told you about social media being a big term, because I could apply almost everything this book told me. But in the virtual worlds in the title referred to virtual worlds like World of Warcraft or Second Life, you know, mainly video games. However, they could perfectly be considered social media by all means. And well, I tried to apply what that book told me, and I did three things. First of all, the participation in the platforms. What I try to do is to, well, I already participate in platforms. I am an avid social media user. And I opened some accounts in federated social media platforms to try to use them and see if they were really that usable, how people interacted, and so on. I also conducted interviews to people. I tried to more or less understand the groups of people that I wanted to address. And finally, I did some data gathering using an online forum, trying to get data like in a bigger scale, sort of. So we're going to see each of these steps. I really thought about completely removing this part from the presentation, because when I presented this to the tribunal that had to give me a mark for my project, I had to explain this. But I finally considered that I wanted to speak about this because probably there are people in the audience that might find this useful. I wanted to know how I did this. So let's move on. Okay, so regarding the interviews, okay, I decided to interview four group of people. Users of old social media, people who used Usenet, IRC, well, or still uses, because many people probably who are listening to this already are still using IRC. Users of centralized social media, people who are trapped sort of in these platforms that we're discussing. Users of federated social media, people who had already done the transition. And finally, instance administrators, because this is a key point of all these platforms, the fact that you can host your own thing. I mean, I don't like how, for example, how Twitter moderates. I want to create my own Twitter. You can do it with Mastodon, with GNU Social, and with other platforms. You can host it yourself. It gives you that liberty, and it gives you that possibility. However, that also comes with certain responsibilities, and I wanted to know about it. So that was with the interviews. Then I created an online form, an online survey, to try to get some statistical data. I know that this may not be especially representative, but it wasn't too costly, and I said, I will try and see what can I find. And then, well, I did this whole thing. So I will discuss the results that I obtained from both sources. And first of all, I'm going to talk to you about the interviews that I made. And by the way, if you're thinking why there are like pictures of old people here, when you do this kind of research, you cannot obviously tell in your paper the name of the people you have interviewed, because, you know, because of privacy concerns. Especially, I'm from Europe, so I have to follow even stricter rules. So what I did was use the names taken from a generation of Spanish poets, the generation of the 27th, and like that, I disguised the identity of my interviewees. And, you know, I made it a little bit more attractive because I also like history. So Let's move on. What did they tell me? First of all, as I have said, I interviewed people who had used social media in the past, in the 90s and so on. And it was interesting because two key aspects were given to me. First of all, people use those platforms for a purpose. What do I mean by this? For example, one of my interviewees was a radio ham, you know, people who has a very big radio and talks to people kilometers and kilometers away. And he, for example, consulted BBS to, in many cases, check for hardware on how or how he could fix certain things, technical stuff. And they told me that that was a very important difference because nowadays, when people get online, it's generally as a pastime. They do not do it for a specific purpose. And also the asynchronicity. Why? Because these platforms didn't work exactly the same way. Because, for example, with IRC, if you nowadays, it might be a little bit different, but in the olden days, you had to plan in advance when you were going to be online in order to be able to talk to people and to, well, get everything. And these two points were, how to explain it, they were key because they framed the problem in a different way. And also way, well, when I talked to them, they made a strong emphasis that these tools were not intended for, you know, the average folk. The GUIs were, well, sometimes non-existent or island clunky. So it was not something that was intended for mass users. It was something for technicians by technicians. And by the way, I was also introduced, well, I knew this term, but they emphasized it because of the netiquette. Because in these platforms, you need an etiquette. For example, with email, emailing in the 90s was not that easy. And things like answer above nor below, all these things were completely necessary. For what? For a good communication. You really needed to behave yourself in order to be able to use these platforms. This no longer applies to modern social media. You don't need that. Well, sometimes etiquette is still arise. For example, I was given this example and I liked it a lot. Some people, when they want to talk about a tweet in Twitter, that is especially, I don't know, problematic, for example, someone being racist, instead of replying to it and then feeding the Twitter algorithm, they take a screenshot and then discuss. Why? Because they don't want to give publicity to that user. And that, for example, is an example of modern etiquette, but it's more like the exception than the rule. So after talking to them, I tried to reach out to users of centralized social media to see basically if they had considered abandoned centralized social media, if they had problems with it. And it was interesting because I talked to two girls and two boys, and basically two of them, the two boys, didn't consider quitting social media. And however, the two girls, one of them had done so. She had strong problems with depression and so on. And she told me that that fear of missing out, and that sense like there was like movement, that constant flow of posts, photographs and so on, kind of helped her because it gave her a stimuli, but ultimately it only worsened her state, and she basically considered quitting all social media. And he told me, when I explained to her, okay, have you heard about this centralized related social media? She basically told me that he considered that it would be the same problem. Okay, you could make some technology that is a little bit better for people, but that behavior is inherent to humans, and the same problems will ultimately arise. And for example, I had this, well, take a little girl, she was in her teens, and she was, you know, very active in social media. And when I said, have you ever considered, or have you quitted social media at some point? And she told me that he had done it. When she attended summer camps, she had her mobile phone taken away, and she didn't use social media. And the most interesting part is that she didn't miss it. And that fear of missing out completely disappeared. because, you know, she was doing other things and so on. And that is a very key point, because that made me starting to doubt about the fear of missing out. If it was really something real, if you were actually missing out, or it was just something completely created artificially. When I talked to these two guys, I had like the opposite effect. Why? Because they were very active again in social media, and they were, one of them, we could say that he was more a producer of content. He had a very big user base of people following him. And for example, when I talked to him about, well, have you, they all, the four of them, knew the bad effects that social media have on people. And they knew that they were basically under constant surveillance, as we have explained previously. But it's not that they didn't care, but they had come to the point that they assumed it as necessary. What do I mean by this? For example, this person said to me, okay, yes, I know that I am being constantly spied when I use Facebook or Twitter, but I'm also technically spied when I go to supermarket to buy groceries, and all my purchases are used to feed statistical models. So what's the deal? And that is probably the biggest step, that people have completely assumed these, all these attacks against their privacy. However, when you start to explain them the consequences, believe me, they start to doubt. But it's very difficult to get to that point. So, once I talk to people that use centralized social media, I decide to talk to people that have quit centralized social media in favor of federated alternatives. And I basically wanted to know if they have found problems, this is very important, if they have missed out something, and strangely not. What do I mean by this? Oh, obviously they faced an important problem, the smaller user base. They, for example, I talked to a woman who was very into animal support groups and these kind of things. And when she moved to Mastodon or Gnu Social, I don't remember. She had problems because there were not so many groups like that active in those platforms, because there were less people. But when I asked them, they didn't really consider that they were missing out anything. And why is that? Because the relation that you have, and this was something that was explained to me, and I found that really interesting. The relation that you have with the people that you follow is not really something that close, especially if you're following, you know, old classmates, relatives. You're not really interacting with them. You're not really talking to them. You just wasn't going to say, oh, yeah, that person got married, or they are visiting that city. But you do not get to really interact with them. And once you stop caring, you don't miss that. Well, maybe because if that person really was important to you, you probably talk to that person in private, you phone them or whatever. And also, what was the thing I was going to say? And I also asked this woman, the girl who migrated to Mastodon, it was to be social, about the perception about the people who uses federated social media. And she told me, I have the idea that this mainly technical men who want to like escape the censorship or the control of the big tech. And that was honestly something that I found out to be important later on. We will discuss it. But then after talking to these people, he was through a questionnaire. Okay, I have missed a little bit with the slides, but whatever. And because here I talk about the instance administrators. Well, and finally I talked to instance administrators. How did they do moderation? How did they deal with, problematic users? How do they pay the bills? This one, for example, was interesting because one of the administrators was part of a university association. So technically the university paid for everything because they had like an old computer turned into a server and literally plugged in a classroom to offer their Mastodon instance. And in the case of this woman, well, I call her in the paper Ernestina, she told me that she had a third person paying for everything. I didn't ask further. And when I asked about moderation, because this was something that I considered important, because nowadays, when I did this research, you know, we have just had the presidential election of the United States, and, you know, all these Trump supporters saying that they were being censored or whatever. But now, even with the war between Russia and Ukraine, we are also seeing cases of, well, technically censorship with the social media restricting the access to, for example, RT, Russia Today. I'm not arguing if it is good or bad. I'm not saying that is happening. So content moderation is something really important in modern social media. So when I asked them, how do they do it? Well, this guy who was in the university association told me that they basically didn't do any kind of moderation because they didn't have enough people. Even though he told me that the platforms themselves provide enough tools to do so. And in the case of Ernestina, she explained to me that they wanted to allow most people to express themselves freely, but they have created a set of rules that they were constantly updating as, well, they encounter more problems. And what certainly struck me the most was the fact that they, when they started their instances, they didn't want to block any content. What do I mean by this? Because when you have an instance, you can federate with other instances, with other servers, and have your users talk to those other servers or whatever. However, they were eventually forced to block some of them. They wanted to limit that censorship to the tools. However, they had to do so in the case of this guy in the university, because their users in their public feed were starting to see content from pornographic instances. So, you know, they had their instance served under the URL of a public university in Spain, so they couldn't allow that. But they both tried to always maintain the content available to them, the most content available to their users. They didn't have this idea, oh, I'm going to create the perfect safe space only with what I want. No. I wanted to leave it as open as I can. And so now we can move to the last step of my research, which was basically analyzing the questionnaire results. The first question was pretty basic. Do you know what federated social media is, and do you use them? As you can see in the graph here, not many people use it. There is a considerable amount of people who knows about it, which is remarkable, but the use base, at least from the 450 people who answered my questionnaire, was not really there. And then the next thing that I did was trying to contrast the amount of computer expertise that people had, and because one of the questions is, do you consider yourself a newbie or an expert with computers in a scale of 0 to 10? And the more people knew how to use computer, the more experts they were, the more they knew about federated social media. And this is very important. Because, well, we'll talk about that later on. Because then I asked another thing. What are your privacy concerns? Because I wanted to see if federated social media was still something restricted in somehow to people who are deeply concerned with privacy. And the relation was not that remarkable. I mean, yeah, obviously, the more people cared about privacy, the more likely they were to know about federated social media and to use it. But it was not as important as with the computer expertise. So this was reinforcing what I was told about the majority of users of these new platforms being middle-aged men with a technical background. This was reinforcing that perception. And finally, I asked the big question. If you know about federated social media, if you have problems with centralized platforms, why don't you quit? And I was given basically these answers. There are people who are skeptical about these platforms. there are people that consider them too complex, even though I think they are quite accessible, but whatever. But the biggest problem by far was that these federated platforms have still a small user base. Most people, when they answered, because they could leave custom answers, and they said, yeah, I don't like having my privacy violated by Facebook, Twitter, by YouTube, but all my friends are there. And the, I don't know, the news channels that I follow are there. So this was the fear of missing out. They're working, restricting them of quitting the platforms and trying to find better alternatives. In a sec. My throat was completely dry by now. So, having seen all this, this was my research at large. So, what are the conclusions that we can reach from here? First of all, why don't people use social media? This federated social media. This is like the big question. Well, firstly, because they don't know that it exists. If you watch the graphs that I have shown, most of the people don't even know that this exists. The only people who knows about it are technical people who are probably interested in sort of things and stumble with these platforms, probably by accident or because other people told them. And then we have the fear of missing out. This is probably the elephant in the room because people are trapped in those walled gardens and they don't want to leave everything that they have constructed, especially if they have a community, if they have a circle that they have created. They don't want to leave that because it's the same as saying when you move to a new city and you, well, nowadays with social media, it's not that difficult, but and you say, what if I lost the contact with all the people that I have known my entire life? Well, probably not your family, but for example, your circle of friends or whatever. That same fear applies here. And finally, we have to question ourselves. What is the future then? Because in this question, I am optimistic. Why? Because I believe in free software and all those things. So I better be positive about the future. I really do think that federated social media eventually will become the norm, but it will not be easy, and it will not be something that is going to be happening tomorrow. I see two alternatives here. In the first alternative, people start to use federated social media gradually. And I always compare this with, for example, smoking and recycling. Recycling was something that was done just by hippies in the 80s and 90s, and now, at least in Europe and probably in the United States, have become the norm. If you go to someone's house and they don't recycle, you just think they are weird. And the same happened with smoking. Smoking was something completely normal. It was like an institution. If you were having a cup of coffee with someone, you're probably smoking. And nowadays, we see in movies and so on, people smoking at banks and universities say, that's weird. They shouldn't be smoking. And I think that the same would happen here, that the public eventually, step by step, will become aware of all these things. Or, this is one alternative. The other is that some big cataclysm happens. Why? What do I mean by this? For example, I was really hoping that this would be the case when Facebook disconnected from the internet. I was like, please, 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 find out about the Fediverse and move to there. But it didn't happen. But some cataclysmic event like this, or for example, I have an example of this. I myself don't particularly like it, but it's a good example. When Donald Trump lost the presidential election, a lot of his supporters, that user base, moved to other platforms because they considered that they were being censored by Twitter, by Facebook, by all these players. So it has happened to some extent before. And I really think that might happen again. Obviously, I cannot predict the future. I cannot say what is going to be that cataclysmic event, that turning point. But I really think that it will be reached at some point. And just to finish, because this is probably the most important thing of everything I have told you, because I am talking at Liber Planet. There are people here that are activists, that are developers, maybe of these platforms, and we all have to ask ourselves, what is to be done? What you see here is a book from a Russian novelist from the 19th century named Что делать, which translates as this, what is to be done? And this is a question that we have to ask ourselves. What can we do to change this? First of all, people need to know about federated social media. They don't know that it exists. And if people doesn't know that an alternative is available, that they do not have to live under the yoke of Twitter, of Facebook, of YouTube, of Google in general, and so on, they are not even going to consider those alternatives. They need to know that they exist before they think about anything else. And then we need to spread awareness of everything that happens behind these centralized platforms. What I have told you about the research on the fear of missing out, on communicative capitalism, all those things. People need to know about it. People need to know the implications of their use of these platforms in order for them to really understand the full picture and being able to be critical about it, to be able to say, I don't want to be part of this, or I don't think this is correct. And then starting to consider the alternatives that they need to know. And finally, what is obvious, we need to explain how these alternatives, these federated platforms or these decentralized platforms in general can solve those problems, can really be a real alternative, can really provide them with the same experience, but at least in a more healthy manner. This is what I think is the tasks that we have to accomplish. This is basically what I have done. Now I am available to answer questions or whatever. Thank you very much. Oh, and finally, because this is something that everyone says, you have built it. Now you have to make them come, because they will not come just because you build it.
Okay, so as room mentor, I'm supposed to ask you the questions. I'll just introduce myself first. So I'm Tom. I'm a student at Leuven University. I do informatics there. So I had one question myself. Like with smoking, you made a comparison. That it's like normal earlier to have like people smoking every day. Well, at least here in Belgium, there was a lot of government intervention there. There were no advertisements allowed for smoking, and all the packaging for smokes had some sickness on it, and like there were not attractive packagings, so the people who buy cigarettes see whatever sickness may come over them. So would you propose like similar things for social media?
Well, I made the comparison because as a smoker, let me structure the answer. The thing is that people now consider normal to be basically spied, to have all your data taken when you use social media and so on. However, the same happened with smoking. We knew that smoking was bad from a very long age, but it wasn't until society, yes, I know that there was a lot of government intervention, this same happened here in Spain, but it was necessary for the public to become aware of the problem. And also, that legislation regarding smoking couldn't have been passed if people didn't have become aware that this was bad. And the same, I think, would happen with privacy. Eventually, we will reach a point on which people will be completely fed up and say, okay, we won't change. Maybe the change will come from legislation. Maybe the change will come from other sources. That is what I cannot completely sure. But I really think that was a change that came from below rather than above in the case of smoking. And I think that the same would apply to social media and to privacy in general in the digital age.
Okay, that's cool. And the stream was moved to questions about technical problems. So I don't have many questions. There was also one guy who said that, like, all social media would be, it doesn't really matter if you have an open source or a decentralized social media platform for this. Mm-hmm. I also think that it's like how to go about this, that you can't just simply change social media platform in order to resolve this.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to, the people have to be aware of this themselves, and by simply changing their social media platform won't really stop this.
I understand.
Some kind of problem to monitor themselves on social media or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the thing is, and that is what I tried to explain with that first slide when I explained the history of these platforms. We didn't used to have this problem with the old social media. I mean, the problem, at least as I see it, came into place when social media became commodified. It became a commodity, something to be sold. And precisely these new platforms, it's not simply that they are free software and therefore inherently good. No, it's because as they are not a business, as it is something by the community, for the community, they don't enter in this dynamics of having to trap their users, of having to make them use the platforms as much as they can. And I can give you an example of this. All social media platforms stop using pagination, you know, because I remember that in the old days, when you use Facebook, you have pages. You have page one of your post, page two, page three. The problem is that creates like a wall, an artificial wall, because when you reach, I don't know, page six in Reddit, in the old version of Reddit, you reach page 10, and you might say, okay, I have too much Reddit for today. I'm going to quit. However, now you'll have the eternal scroll when you go down, 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 and constant content is given to you. And that is precisely a design choice in order to make you use the social media as much as you can. And that is something that these free platforms try to avoid completely. For example, if you master, I think the main application has pagination by default, or for example, I talk about Mastodon because it's the one that I mainly use. For example, the statistics about your post, you know, how many times it has been shared, it has been liked, are hidden by default. You don't see them. Why? Because if you see a post that has been shared a lot of times, you may say, oh yeah, I want to share, and I want to enter, and I want to comment. And you start to engage more, and therefore generating more data. In Mastodon, you don't see that. So if you share a post, it's probably because you just liked it and you want other people to see it. As it is something created by the community, they take these decisions precisely in order to make your relation with social media better, while still offering like the experience itself.
Okay. I think that will be about it. One question is also, what are some good methods of promoting the alternatives to all your friends? I myself have also experienced this, like I say, like, hey, let's go to another platform, but there's an inconvenience of switching, and there's maybe one person who doesn't want to switch, which then makes others, don't want to switch as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a hard problem to switch with, like, because you have an entire group that has to switch all in one or something mm-hmm. like
that. Yes, that is why I talked about that turning point. That is the term I wanted to use, because I really do think that is something that can be perfectly feasible. And I didn't explain it in the paper, but this is a consideration of mine. A problem that all these new platforms that federative alternatives have is that they are generally clones of existing platforms. I mean, someone created Instagram, so let's make an alternative to Instagram. Someone created Twitter, let's make an alternative. But nobody has yet created a new social media platform with new features or something that people like that is from the very beginning a federated platform. So I think that if that eventually happens, that could probably be something that would turn the balance, because people would reach the new free platform and say, oh, I like this. So what is this concept of the Fediverse? Oh, but I can follow people on a place Twitter-like, but without leaving this. Oh, this is good, this is good. So probably that would be, how to say it? That would probably be that turning point that I talked about. But I have to admit, this is something that will take time. And yes, it's very easy to be pessimistic. I'm optimistic just because of the sake of it, but we'll have to see. And by the way, it's not like social media has not died already. For example, if you ask someone in the early 2000s about MySpace, they wouldn't have never guessed that MySpace would eventually die and close down. And they have done it. But, you know, this is something we will only be able to say if I am right or wrong in the very long, long, in the very long future.
No.
Far away future.
Okay. There's one by SSV as well. What regulatory implications do you believe will be created that are targeted towards social media sites hosted on ActivityPub?
Could you repeat, please, the question?
So what regulatory implications do you believe will be created that are targeted towards social media sites hosted on ActivityPub?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, honestly, I am not really sure because... well, let me try to think how to explain this. I'm really sure about the implication of the technology itself, because I wanted to frame this work as something focused more on the human part, because, as I said, I consider the technology as something to be, well, closed. Technology continually evolves, but and currently the most, as she says, the most used technology is ActivityPub, and it's the one that has been standardized by W3C. But I don't want to bet on the technological standpoint, because I really think that it's something that will just evolve by itself. That will not be something that would determine... don't worry, it's fine. Well, yeah, basically my answer was that. So if we're running out of time, I think we can leave it here.
Yeah, okay. I think that's understandable also. Okay. So yes, I think that then we will close this.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yep. Mm-hmm.